How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the Latest Issues Etc. Journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues Etc. Journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Sometimes, even in a loss, you can honor him more.
Do you believe in the divine saving grace of Jesus Christ?
I happen to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and my Savior.
The gospel is the glue that holds a Christian marriage together, not sex. I mean, Ed Young has replaced Christ with the libido.
Washington jet drivers love Issues Etc.
I often marvel how it can be that those who are otherwise pro-life, they regard themselves as pro-life, can be taken in by what seem to me rather thin arguments by politicians, usually running for election, who are not thoroughly pro-life. Arguments about, well, you know, I am personally pro-life, but I have to uphold a woman's right to choose, and the real goal here is reducing the number of abortions, and pro-lifers nod their heads and say, well, you know, maybe he's not 100% with us, but he does want to reduce the number of abortions, so I'm going to vote for him even though he doesn't seem very pro-life. What's wrong here? We're going to be talking about five questions that pro-lifers must answer. Scott Klusendorf will be our guest for the first half hour of Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 18th of January. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tom Neumüller will join us in just a few minutes to talk about teaching a Sunday school lesson, Jesus calling Matthew the tax collector. He's kind of that among the tax collectors and sinners that Jesus would eat and drink with. In the second hour of the program, it's a very popular YouTube video out there. Usually goes under the title Jesus Hates Religion. It's a young guy dressed in a very hip fashion, standing in a courtyard, rapping about the difference between Jesus and religion. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is going to join us in the second hour of the program to respond to some of the arguments made in that popular YouTube video, straighten out our thinking on this word religion, what the young man is really arguing against. He doesn't know, but what he's really arguing against. Then Frank Turk will join us. He's founder and president of CrossExamine.org. We're going to talk about a recent column by Leonard Pitts Jr. on the bigotry of social conservatives. He goes after Rick Santorum, and we'll get a response to that from Frank Turek. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us here in the studio. We get them in real time. Talk back at issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at issuesetc. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest. He's president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. And he's also written an article for the latest Christian research journal titled The 2012 Elections, Five Questions for Pro-Life Advocates. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be back on your intolerant homophobic program, Todd.
Thank you. You say that the failure to understand what it really means to be pro-life may well have made the marginal difference in recent presidential elections. What do you mean?
Well, what happened in 2008 is that a handful of notable pro-life evangelicals and left-leaning Catholics threw their support behind Barack Obama on grounds that he was the most effective pro-life candidate. And here's what they argued. They said that voting for Barack Obama constituted an enlightened pro-life view that was morally superior to this narrow party politics that the religious right has been engaged in since the time of Ronald Reagan. And they argued that instead of passing laws against abortion, what should be done is we should work collectively to reduce the need for it. And as the argument went, Barack Obama would work to reduce the underlying causes that drive women to abort in the first place, even though he wouldn't pass laws against abortion. And based on that line of reasoning, they said Christians not only ought to vote for Barack Obama from a prudential viewpoint, but from a moral standpoint, it was superior to throw support behind Barack Obama. And that was the argument we were fed. And it worked, because twice as many white evangelicals ages 18 to 44 voted for Barack Obama in 2008 than voted for John Kerry in 2004. And Catholics saw their support for a pro-abortion presidential candidate jump up 7 points from what it had been from John Kerry. So this strategy worked.
Did it prove to be the – it got the election done, but did it prove to be the boon to the pro-life movement that some pro-lifers thought it would be?
Oh, not at all. This has been the most pro-abortion administration we have ever seen. Within days of taking office, Barack Obama restored funding for elective abortion overseas. The health care bill that was passed by Congress, rammed through with only Democrat support, allows for the funding of insurance plans that provide for abortion. This is not an administration that has done anything to reduce abortion, and it's not one that's going to.
You say that what we need to realize at the outset, before we even get to these five questions that you've laid out, what we need to realize at the outset is that the fundamental issue before us is not merely how to reduce the number of abortions.
That's right.
What is it?
Well, the number one issue in front of us is who counts as one of us. This is a debate about who we are as a people. Do we include the unborn as having a natural right to life just like the rest of us, or do the unborn remain candidates for the dumpster? And Barack Obama has answered that question, as has the Democrat Party, very, very decisively. The unborn belong in the dumpster. This is a debate about human equality every bit as much as racial equality was up for grabs a century ago, and it's something that we're going to have to face as the core issue. We're not going to be able to skirt this core issue by pretending to reduce the need for abortion.
You say that pro-life Christians need to persuasively answer several questions, the first of which you say is, are pro-life advocates focused too narrowly on abortion? After all, informed voters consider many issues, not just one. It's kind of the single issue voter question.
Yeah, and it's true. Abortion isn't the only issue, Todd, any more than the treatment of slaves wasn't the only issue back in the 1860s or the treatment of Jews in the 1940s. But these were the dominant issues of their day. And if we're going to be clear-thinking Christians who make an impact for Jesus on the culture, we're going to attribute different importance to different issues. And we're going to give greater fundamental weight to the pressing questions of our day. We're not going to skirt around them and try to make them all seem as if they're all equal.
So what you're saying is, effectively, yes, there are many issues that will impact any individual voter, even a pro-life voter. But as Father Richard John Newhouse was fond of pointing out during his long fight against legalized abortion, abortion is an issue of a greater caliber than the others.
That's exactly right. For example, if we had a man running for president who told us that men had a right to beat their wives, most people would say that alone disqualifies him for office, even if his economic policies look great, even if his foreign policy looked great, and even if he was right on a host of other moral issues. There is something fundamental about the dignity of women that should not be trampled on, and anybody who tramples on that is thereby disqualified because of the greater weight of that issue when compared to the others.
The second question that you say pro-lifers need to persuasively answer is, why don't pro-life advocates care about social justice both here and in developing countries?
Yeah, and there's three things we can say about that, Todd. The first is they do care, which is why we have pro-life crisis pregnancy centers all over this country, all over Canada, and we're starting to see them creep up in Europe as well, which is a good thing. So we do care, but that aside, how does it follow that because pro-life Christians oppose the deliberate slaughter of an innocent human being, that we must therefore take responsibility for all of society's ills? You know, Frederick the Great was once said to have said, he who attacks everywhere attacks nowhere. And that's true. If we dilute our efforts and spread ourselves so thin that we don't focus on the primary ethical challenge in front of us, we'll never deal with it. Third thing I would say about this is, of course, as pro-lifers, we do care about the poor in developing countries, and we care that they get clean water. But look, the U.S. government, Todd, is not going to solve those problems in those countries the way it can solve abortion here. The United States government, for example, is not going to be able to ban the slave trade of young girls in Thailand. That's the job of that nation's citizens. But what the government here can and should do is ban the killing of unborn humans within our own borders. And that's why prudent pro-lifers have always been concerned about many issues, but focused most importantly on the ones we can deal with right here. And not only does our government, Todd, look the other way on abortion, it's actively promoting it. So we have a duty to first and foremost deal with what we can deal with in our own borders.
So that last point is very important with about 30 seconds here. Abortion is different from those other issues because at this point our government is actively encouraging abortion on demand outside its borders, too.
Oh, yes. In fact, President Obama immediately restored funding to organizations that promote abortions overseas. He did that, as I said, within days of taking office. So this government that we have right now is very much involved in promoting evil, and we as citizens have a duty to oppose that.
Well, here's another question we'll get to on the other side of the break that pro-lifers need to persuasively answer. You've heard it before. Why don't you pro-lifers oppose war? If you oppose abortion, if you think thou shalt not kill should apply within the womb, don't you think it also should apply outside our country's borders where we are waging, where others are also waging war? Another question that needs to be persuasively answered, and we'll get that answer from Scott Klusendorf on the other side of the break. It's Wednesday afternoon, January the 18th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. You can join us as well, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. How can an understanding of the theology of the cross help in times of pain, suffering, and loss? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is titled The Problem of Suffering, A Father's Hope. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Problem of Suffering by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Problem of Suffering, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
You can't copy the murder.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Scott Klusendorf is our guest president of Life Training Institute. We're talking about five questions pro-lifers must answer, especially in light of the 2012 elections coming up. The third question that you say that really needs to be answered, and it's often heard as an objection to the pro-life position, why don't you pro-lifers oppose things like war while you're opposing abortion?
The short answer there is that war can be evil, but it isn't always so. Where abortion is not a contingent evil like war, it's an intrinsic evil, and laws that permit it are scandalous. And what a lot of Christians did in the 2008 election, Todd, is they confused contingent moral evils with intrinsic ones. For example, a war might be just or unjust depending on the circumstances, but laws that say that you can kill an unborn human being intentionally are wrong by definition, and pro-life Christians must oppose them. Now, of course, the objection is, well, when you do war, you're killing innocent human beings. Well, that is true. Sometimes innocent human beings are killed, but here's the difference. A general in a just war may foresee that innocent humans will die, securing a lasting peace, but he does not intend their deaths. With elective abortion, the death of an innocent human being is not merely foreseen, it's what we intend. And the problem is, we've got a lot of Christians that are perfectly willing to support a political party that supports an intrinsic evil simply because that party and its candidate for president promises to help us avoid a contingent one. And that's just bad moral thinking.
I mean, shouldn't that question really, at some point after answered, be turned around on those who would oppose war on principle, but not oppose abortion?
Yeah, we could say the sword cuts both ways. Look, you're fine with elective abortion, but you oppose war, so that makes you inconsistent as well. And of course, we can do that. The sword does cut both ways.
Number four, instead of passing laws against abortion or restricting a woman's right to abortion, why don't pro-lifers focus on reducing the underlying causes of abortion, poverty, all of the other attendant things that seem to be in the laundry list of causes for abortion?
Well, imagine if I were running for public office, Todd, and I said, look, the underlying cause of spousal abuse is psychological. So instead of making it illegal to beat your wife, what I'm going to do is make sure that if you're a man, we provide federally funded counseling for you to help you get at the root of your aggression. Look, we would consider that a ridiculous reply, and rightfully so. There are underlying causes for murder, rape, child abuse, and so on, but that doesn't make it wrong or misguided to have laws banning these actions.
So it's a true false dichotomy in that
question. It really is. And here's another thing. Why are liberals even concerned about reducing the number of abortions in the first place? If elective abortion does not unjustly take the life of a defenseless human being, who cares how many abortions there are a year? But if it does take the life of a defenseless human being, which is the only reason to worry about why there's a whole lot of them happening, then it makes perfect sense to pass laws protecting the unborn. And I think what we have here is a classic case of the political left trying to have its cake and eat it too.
Here's number five, and this is the one that hits home for Christian pro-lifers. Should pastors, Christian pastors, challenge church members who actually support a political party sworn to protect elective abortion?
Well, they should certainly challenge believers and non-believers alike with the moral truth that elective abortion unjustly takes the life of a defenseless human being. And if you believe that, that needs to impact how you vote, which parties you support, and how you involve yourself politically. Of course, pastors shouldn't claim that supporting a particular party is going to save us from God's wrath. Only the gospel, of course, does that. But, Todd, we're a nation where the people are the government. And if we are a nation where the people are the government, Christians have a duty to apply their biblical worldview in a way that limits evil and promotes the good insofar as possible, given what we're faced with politically. And at the legislative level in particular, meaning House and Senate races, for example, that almost always is going to mean voting for the party that, though not perfect, will do the best job currently at protecting unborn humans against a party that's going to sanction killing them wholesale. And right now in American politics, we have one political party that is sworn to kill unborn human beings and is willing to use taxpayer funding to do it, and they will die on that hill. That is the one principle they're going to stand for. You have another major political party that doesn't do as good a job as it should defending the unborn, but at least it allows us to advance our cause and limit the evil, and with a little work, we might be able to whip it into shape a little better. So given those realities, what is the biblical worldview to do when you look at it through that lens? And the answer is we have a duty to oppose evil and promote the good insofar as possible, and that means supporting the party that will best help us do that.
You say in that political sense we really should focus on one particular chamber of our legislature, that's the House of Representatives, and the potential for who actually takes the most influential position in that legislative body, the Speaker.
Yeah, because see, here's the thing. Let's say you have pro-life members of a pro-abortion party, and we've had that. We've seen that happen in American politics, even as recently as the recent debate over health care. You had pro-life Democrats claiming that they were pro-life and were with us on the pro-life issue. The problem with them was not only that they voted, for the most part, in favor of a health care plan that would allow for the funding of abortion. It's that when it came to the most crucial vote they would cast as a member of the House, they voted pro-abortion. And what they did, every one of those pro-life Democrats voted for a pro-abortion Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. That set in stone that pro-life legislation was dead on arrival and that pro-abortion legislation would be promoted. And then these same pro-life Democrats run out and say, oh, we're pro-life, we're with you, you shouldn't, you know, chastise us for not standing on the issue, we're with you. Well, in the most important vote they cast, they weren't with us. And so I think we as Christians need to connect the dots for lay people. Don't just vote for a politician who claims to be pro-life. We need to look at what party apparatus are they supporting. Because if they're claiming to be pro-life, but they're voting to keep in power a party that promotes abortion wholesale, they're not really helping the pro-life cause.
Real quickly, you draw that, you've drawn it before, but you draw it again, if you will, especially with regard to the pastoral response on this, the slavery parallel.
Well, if it were 1860 and you're a pastor, Todd, and 50% of the people in your church were supporting a political party that thought it was okay to enslave an entire class of human beings and use them for your own ends, would that be okay with you if you're a pastor? Or would you think, you know, I think maybe something's wrong with the alleged biblical worldview of half my church when they think an entire class of human beings can be enslaved or killed to serve other human beings? Now, I'm not suggesting here that pastors should stand up in the pulpit and say, look, if you don't vote for a particular party, you're not a Christian and you can't be saved. But something is wrong with the worldview of a professed, mature Christian who thinks it's okay to support a political party that is perfectly fine making sure it remains legal to kill innocent human beings. And I think pastors need to start connecting the dots. The old excuse, oh, we're not going to have a hint of politics in our ministry, those days are over. We scorn pastors who would have argued that way in 1860, so why do we give them a pass in 2012?
With about a minute here, make the case, why should the life issue be the major issue in the 2012 elections?
There is nothing more fundamental, Todd, than the question of who we are as a people and who counts as one of us. Our nation was founded on the principle that human beings have rights, not because a government says so, but in virtue of the kind of thing they are. We have rights by nature simply because we're human. And our government's job is not to create those rights. It's not to allow them, it is to recognize and protect them. And if you deny the fundamental right that humans have value simply because of the kind of thing they are, you have no secure foundation for any rights, including the right to worship freely.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. He's written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled The 2012 Elections, Five Questions for Pro-Life Advocates. You can find out more about his book and Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thanks for being our guest.
Todd, always great to be with you. Keep up the good fight.
When we come back, we're going to be going to the Gospel of Mark, the second chapter, where we will find Jesus calling Levi, the tax collector, known elsewhere as Matthew. And what a remarkable thing it is, because Jesus, this is the same Jesus who will later be accused of eating with tax collectors and sinners, of consorting with them, of being a friend of tax collectors and sinners. And yet he welcomes as one of his first disciples, one of these tax collectors. Why is it? And what does it say about how Jesus welcomes us as his disciples and friends? We'll answer all those questions with Tom Newmel, a senior editor of Sunday School Materials for Concordia Publishing House, based in St. Louis, on the other side of the break. Hour two of Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon is going to be pretty exciting. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is going to join us first for the better part of that hour. He has responded recently in his Worldview Everlasting video blog to another YouTube video that has been making the rounds lately, usually goes by the name Jesus Hates Religion. And, well, Jonathan takes issue with some of the things in that YouTube video. We'll see what he has to say in hour two of Issues Etc. I know your brothers and your sister and your mother too. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Sunday notes the 39th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion. It's tragic. Since then, over 55 million babies have been sacrificed on the altar of so-called choice. But I also want to take this time to share some encouraging news. Last year, states passed and enacted a record number of laws protecting America's unborn babies, three times the number passed the year before. Research shows these pro-life laws are effectively working to curb abortion and protect mothers and children. Parental involvement laws, informed consent, and bans on late-term abortion have helped spare countless women the anguish of abortion and save their babies. Please dedicate this year to actively praying for the end of abortion and supporting the pro-life movement any way you can.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.